last part with defining a function by some integral representation and then understanding the analytical approach by understanding the formations of that function. I just wanted to flash you, and at the end we can go over it. This is a possible solution of the problem of the Zhukovsky airfoil. Sorry? The mic. Good. That makes sense. Okay, is it better? Okay, so here is a possible solution to the problem of the airfoil. At the end of today's lecture, I will briefly comment on some subtleties involved. Otherwise, if we will not have time, I will simply put this file on the wiki, and I recommend that you try to understand the several functions that I'm using. For example, I'm using here a slightly different syntax than what you are used, and what you should do is you select what you don't understand, and you go to and you click F1 or whatever, which sends you to help, and you try to decode what have I done here. As you see, it's a relatively short code, just three small boxes. And with this code, if I would run it, this is what I would get. I would get, it takes some time to compute, I would get some wing, and as I told you, we could change the parameters of this wing, and automatically the new lines would appear. Okay? And this is what I was asking you to do. Okay, good. But as I told you, I will put this file on the wiki. This is a possible solution. That for sure there are other solutions, even more economical than this one. And probably today, at the end of the morning, I will come over again and discuss a bit some of the subtleties involved. Okay, good. So for now, so my goal today is to finish all the theory and all the explanations on how to do analytic continuation. That I wanted to explain, and tomorrow we will be only dealing with examples and with applications of what we have developed so far. So tomorrow I will consider physics examples illustrating applying the techniques that we will develop today. So the example we were considering yesterday was slightly complicated, so let's start by considering a toy model of what we are doing. Namely, let's come back to our square root. So it took me almost 10 minutes to draw this picture. And then at the end, I noticed that I drew the real axis going to the left. Please don't be confused. So normally, we draw it with the real axis going to the right. But so for the function square root of g, as g is positive, as g is negative, I could have either, say, for example, square root of minus 4 could be either 2i or minus 2i. And this is just a statement that there are two sheets where the function takes value, the down sheet and the up sheet. And as I go around, I just go smoothly from, if I just start going around, I will just go smoothly from here into the other sheet. And there's nothing discontinuous about it. I will just go through, and these lines, this sheet just continues below the other, and this one just continues below the other. Yes? So if we go around twice, we go to the same spot, because then we start here, let's continue in another color, and we go around one more time. We are on the lower one. Now we are here. Now I am in the upper one, and now I am in the same spot. So this will be a full turn, right? So if I would go around just once, I would think I am at the same z, but I would be on the other sheet. Then I would go around once more, and then I would be in the right sheet. Okay? And again, this is not so surprising. At large, z, let's write z as rho e to the I phi, because we want to go around, so let's pick some rho and just go around. Square root of z would be square root of rho, which is the absolute value, is positive, e to the I phi over 2. So this goes back to itself. When phi goes to phi plus 4 pi and not 2 pi, because we have e to the I phi over 2. Right? So we need to go around 4 times to go back to the same value. So the way we would draw, we can decide to put some cut, which, as I told you, is fictitious, and then think that we are starting here, going here, to indicate that we went to what we would call the lower sheet in this picture. We could change color, put something orange, go around. Now we entered back, we went around, we entered back our previous sheet, and we would put it again in white. So we would need to go around twice to come back to the same position. And as I told you, what would happen if we would analytically continue is that we would have this point 0, and we would start expanding, say, around 1. Not around 0, but around 1. We would have some circle here where we know the function very well by expanding it. There is some finite radius of convergence, which is 1 in this case. And then we would expand and we would go in this way. And after going around in all these analytic continuations, we would find that we are not approaching the same point. And if we would continue the analytic continuation, we would not get at the same point. Okay? So we start here, and then we would end square root of z final would be different than square root of z initial. Because z final and z initial, even though they have the same value as coordinates in this complex plane, they should not be thought of as the same point, because one of them is the point, say, 2 plus I in the upper sheet, and the other is the point 2 plus I, for example, on the lower sheet. Right? Because, and it's not surprising, because if you want, this is square root of some z on the upper sheet, and this is some square root of some z, which is not on the same place in that surface, on the lower sheet. So this kind of statement would be the function square root of z lives in a two-sheeted Riemann surface. Or if you want, defines because it defines the two-sheeted Riemann surface. Now, let's rederive this using a very simple way of thinking of square root of z. Let's think of square root of z as being... Okay, let's think of square root... Let's choose another variable. Let's think of it as square root of g, to be similar to what we were seeing the other day, yesterday. Let's think of this function, f of g, which is square root of g, f of g equals square root of g, as being g times the integral dx over square root of pi from minus infinity to plus infinity e to the minus gx squared. Okay? Is it clear to everyone that this gives square root of g? So I need to rescale x, right? I can rescale x to get rid of this g here, and this makes this be a square root of g. And then the Gaussian integral is well normalized because I divided by the square root of pi. Okay? So this stuff here would give, this part here would give 1 over square root of g, and that's why I decided to multiply by g. Okay? So we chose to think of this function here as an integral representation, even though we know what the function is explicitly. So it's a bit overkilling. But this is just to illustrate, because we control very well the square roots, and therefore let's try to understand the square root in this language where we created an integral representation. And let's understand the analytic continuation, let's understand this analytic continuation using this method of finding an integral representation and then deforming the contour to ensure that everything is always smooth. Okay? So our goal now is to understand So our goal is to understand this picture. Using the integral representation. Okay, any question here? Yes?
I kind of got lost when you were
talking about
the integral representation.
So this integral here defines a function of g. And for each g, I compute this integral and I get an answer. But what function is it? It's a function square root of g. Because you know how to compute this integral, right? This is a Gaussian integral. So you just, if you want to rescale x by x plus x tilde over square root of g, this dx becomes dx tilde over square root of g, which makes this guy a square root of g. And the rest is a Gaussian integral normalized to 1 because I divide by 1 over square root of 5. Right? So this stuff here gives just 1 over square root of g, and times that it gives square root of g. So this is a complicated way of writing square root of g. Okay, now we have some freedom here. We can say that this is equal to g integral dx over square root of pi, and we can integrate over some other equivalent contour, because we know that if we deform the contour, the result doesn't change. And we have to understand what do we mean by some other equivalent contour. What kind of contours can we choose? But we know that for some deformations, the result doesn't change. So, of course, I can integrate this over some other contour. Now, so let's see what are the possible contours. First of all, we have the contours of integration. This is the original one, our gamma, which runs from minus infinity to plus infinity. Okay? So now I'm thinking about the complex plane of x. This is real part of x. This is imaginary part of x. This is the original contour. Now, other possible contour is the contour which starts exactly like this one, here, and then in the middle it does whatever it wants to do. Because there is no obstruction and we can deform whatever we want, and the result is exactly the same. Yes? Sorry? Yeah? So this contour would be one possibility. This one here, another possibility. To go from this to this, I just have to deform the contour, and nothing special happens. As we saw, I can deform the contours in whatever way I want, and the result is always the same. Okay? So far, so good? Is this clear to everyone? I can, of course, choose this contour here. Now, here, we decided that asymptotically, they both behave in the same way. Okay? So now you might ask, what about changing the endpoints as well? Can we also change the endpoint? Okay. Again, so the integral with this gamma, this new contour, gamma prime, or with this contour, gamma, are exactly the same. So I can use gamma prime or I can use gamma. So I set some equivalent contour. For example, gamma prime. Okay? And this original one is what I called integral over gamma. What about changing this endpoint? So what was important for this integral to be well defined, for this integral to be convergent, is that, so for the integral to converge, the real part of g x squared must be bigger than 0. So that is exponential as some suppression. This means, what is g x squared? G x squared is equal to absolute value of g, absolute value of x to the 1/2, times e to the argument of g plus twice the argument of x times I. Right? Just the absolute value and the angle. And I need that this angle here the argument of g plus twice the argument of x, where do we need this to lie? We need this to have to be between up to pi over 2 and more than minus pi over 2. So we need this to be greater or equal than minus pi over 2 and smaller or equal to pi over 2. Okay? Notice that at pi over 2, this is purely imaginary. Right? Yes. X squared. Good. Good. Right? So this is the point where g x squared purely imaginary, and at this point also g x squared purely imaginary, and in between the real part is positive. Okay? Good. So for now, so first, let G be real and positive. Okay? First, let's consider G to be some positive real number. Then, the argument of G is 0, and we need the argument of X to lie between pi over 4 and minus pi over 4. This means that we can define our integral. I'm not saying that it gives the same value. I'm saying that it's possible to define it. Let's see in a moment that it does give the same value. But for now, I'm just claiming that I can define the contour of integration to go not to infinity along the real axis, but I can define it, it's well defined, to define it to go to infinity, provided it stays inside these pizza slices of angle pi over 4. So another possible contour, which gives a finite result, yes?
Stay within that, as long as it...
Absolutely, that's what I'm going to do. So, as long as it goes to infinity, it stays inside, any contour like this would be a good contour. So what's important is that as it goes to infinity, it must stay within this region. Okay? And here, as it goes to infinity, it must stay within this angle here. This is well defined because I'm going to infinity inside this piece of slices, and the exponential is giving me suppression. Okay? So this is a contour where it is well defined, and let's call it gamma prime prime. Okay? Now comes an important step, which is to realize that the function of g using the contour gamma, which is equal to the function of g using the contour gamma prime, this we saw, it was obvious, it's also equal to the function of g using the contour gamma prime prime. It also works. Now, this is not obvious because I'm also changing the endpoints. And what we saw is that if we fix the endpoints, we can deform the contour and the result is always the same. Right? But why is it true? It's true because what I need to bring this contour to the real axis is exponential, is zero, basically. It's a contribution which vanishes at infinity. So I can connect this point to the other one at infinity and without doing any mistake. So let me be more precise. What I mean is that if we have a contour like that one, which stays inside these slices, and which is something like this, let's suppose that only one end goes in some other direction, versus the original contour gamma. I have gamma here, and I have gamma prime here. Okay? To show that they are the same, I must show that as I go to infinity, this arc here, this contribution here, let's call it I connecting. We must show that this I connecting is zero. If this I connecting is zero, then indeed, so I can do it at the two ends, but I'm just showing you here, then indeed all these contours is a closed contour and it gives zero, and therefore the two contours are equivalent. So I just need to show that I can connect this point at this with zero cost. That if I integrate from here to here and then in this way, that part which I needed to connect is zero. And why is this why is this part zero? So it is zero because the integrand, the function, the integrand is exponentially small. The integrand is exponentially small, right? It's exponential of something. And the arch is polynomial. So this length here, this length, of, let's estimate that contribution. The length of that arc there is of order lambda times the angle it makes, times this phi. So this is of order lambda times phi. Okay? Versus the value at the function, f, the function at this arch here, which is of order e to the minus something, some number with a positive real part, times lambda square, where lambda is the distance to the origin. So as I'm very far to the origin, I'm integrating something which is exponentially small over some distance which is polynomially large. So of course, exponential of minus something times lambda square times lambda with some constant goes to zero. So that's really subleaving. It's perfectly under control. Okay? So the integral of my function from this point to this point is zero because the function is basically going to zero faster than the size of the region is increasing. Okay, the function is going to zero exponentially, and an exponential wins against any polynomial. And this, the size of this region is only polynomial. Is this clear? Yeah? Yes. Sorry? F at the arch. F at that arch, this is this arch here, is exponentially small, and exponential times function is equal to zero. Okay? So it means that we can choose gamma prime, or we can choose this gamma prime prime as well. So this integral here is a complicated way of getting square root of g. So this integral here, defined with this contour, is equal to square root of g. It's a way of defining square root of g. Do this integral along some contour which stays inside this slice here, and which ends inside this sector here. Okay, good. So now, any questions so far? I'm going now to start changing G in the complex plane and seeing how do I need to modify my contours of integration. How does my class of allowed contours changes? Okay. Any question? Okay. Now, for complex G, let G, for example, be absolute value of G times some angle, okay? And we want to study, here is zero. We know that we can represent some cut, as we said it's fictitious, doesn't matter. We want to study what happens when I move to the complex plane. Now, we saw that the argument of x must be smaller or equal than pi over 4 minus the argument of g, and must be bigger or equal than minus pi over 4 minus the argument of g. Okay. So as g, this is what we saw. No, not yet. Was this correct? Yes. No. One half of the argument of g. Good. Is this clear? That's a point I wrote. I'm just... So it means that my slice, my region where I must end, is rotating as I am rotating G. As I am changing G, the slice is no longer like this, but it is moving in a complex plane where I am allowed to integrate. Right? So as I move G, if this was my slices for real G, and if I could pick some contour of integration, for example, this one, or, as we said, some which doesn't even go to zero and might leave, this would be two possible contours, gamma and gamma prime. Okay. When I rotate Z, when I rotate G, when I am here, for example, so this would be case A, here this would be A, and now I am at B. I rotated by an angle theta. What happens is that my regions rotate by, the limits change by theta over 2. Right? So I changed G a bit. G now moved to as some angle theta. Now, my instead of pi over 4 and minus I over 4, I have pi over 4 minus theta over 2 and minus pi over 4 minus theta over 2. So what happened is that okay, what happened is that if this was the original pi over 4 lines, they move by some quantity theta over 2, theta over 2 here. Okay? And now I am only allowed to integrate and to end up inside this region. And before, I could end up in this region here. Okay? Now the region is rotating a bit. Now, there is a very safe way of being sure that I'm always choosing a good contour. Let's always take the contour which is straight in the middle of this region. Okay? And we can think of this contour, if you want, as D representative. Right? Any contour inside this piece of slices will do, but let's choose a canonical one. Let's choose this one, and whenever we are rotating G, let's always choose the contour to be the representative. This ensures that we always choose a contour where the integral is well defined. The result is independent of the contour, but we should always, the only thing we have to require is that we stay always within these slices. Okay? Is this clear so far? Yeah? So now then, let's do this full rotation. Let's rotate G. Let's rotate G by an angle pi. But no one is asking anything. I'm trying to be to go extremely slowly. I hope I'm not putting you to sleep. So, is everyone lost? Okay. Good. So now, let's go from theta equals 0 to theta equal pi. And then we will go from theta equals 0 to theta equal minus pi. So let's first go in this direction. As we go in this direction, these piece of slices will rotate by an angle theta over 2, which is pi over 2. Okay? So they will end up, after this rotation, they will end up vertical. And my representative contour will now be this one here. Okay? So what would this be? This would be integral from infinity times I to minus infinity times I. Okay, there was a G here. Dx over square root of G e to the minus Gx squared. Okay? Sorry? Can you ask again? Ah, oh, what is this? Square root of pi, of course. Yeah? Recall that what is, don't be worried that there is a minus g here, because this, recall that this, if you want, minus g for theta equal to pi is equal to the absolute value of g. It's a positive number, this minus g. But we should not worry, because we are integrating in a region where x is equal to it, is purely imaginary, and therefore x squared is equal to minus t squared. So indeed, we have minus t squared times absolute value of g. It's perfectly positive. Good. So let's do this change of variables here. And then this is equal to g integral dt over square root of pi from infinity to minus infinity e to the minus absolute value of g times t squared. Okay? No, I changed x to be it. There is an I missing here. I g integral from minus infinity to infinity of this. And this is equal. G is minus absolute value of g to minus I absolute value of g integral from infinity to minus infinity of blah, 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 which is equal to plus I absolute value of g integral from minus infinity, I flip the order, to plus infinity e to the minus absolute value of g t squared dt over square root of pi. And this is equal to I square root of absolute value of g. Okay. Now let's rotate in the opposite direction. Let's keep this in mind for a moment. This was just some simple manipulations. Let's rotate theta from 0 to minus pi. Now let theta go from 0 to minus pi. So now we have this point here and we are rotating in the opposite direction. Okay. Then we have our slices like this originally, and now I am moving minus pi, so I have to rotate, but in this direction. So I have my contour like this, and I have to rotate this by pi over 2. So I end up with, again, vertical cones, and here is my representative going up. The difference is that here it was going down, and there it is going up. So if I repeat the same manipulations, changing x to it, this would be equal to It's just a difference in orientation, so to minus I square root of absolute value of G. Right? The only difference is the orientation. It's going up instead of down. Otherwise, the integrand is exactly the same, so the only difference is a minus sign. So here is what we were expecting. We went on one direction and we went to the same point, basically. We start at some g and rotate by pi. We rotate in one direction and we get I square root of absolute value of g. We rotate in the other direction and we get minus I square root of absolute value of g. This is a square root. So this is exactly what a square root is. If you want, you don't even need to write this last step. You can say that this is the value of the square root of the function for some absolute value of g. So I went around and I got plus or minus the function at some positive absolute value. This is exactly the definition of square root. So this is how I would understand that I would go around and I would not land at the same position, but here there would be a plus and here there would be a minus. Yes?
That minus sign right there.
This one? This one appeared because G is negative. Good. Because minus G is absolute value of G. So there was a G here, but G is minus absolute value of G. Right? And this one disappeared because I flipped the integration contour limits. Okay? So what about theta going around once? Let's check now that we need to go around twice to go to the same position. If you go around once, we don't end up with the same contour, but we end up with a contour in the opposite direction, right? Because if theta runs from 0 to 2 pi, I have my original region where I should integrate. And now I have to rotate this by 2 pi over 2, which is equal to pi. So I end up with exactly the same cons, but the integral is running in the opposite direction. And this is exactly our intuition. The square root I went around, and I went to the branch where square root of 4 was 2, to the branch where square root of 4 was minus 2. I just changed the branch, and I'm now in the other sheet, which is represented here by the fact that I get exactly the same thing, but going in the opposite direction. And if I would have theta run from 0 to 4 pi, then, of course, this guy here would again rotate pi more, and I would end up with the original contour. Okay? And we will be back to the same point. Good. Any question here? Okay. Yes.
What kind of position should be used for cube roots
and stuff like that? For cube roots, I would say x to the cube here, for example, would probably do a cube root. An x to the 2/3 here would give a cube root. And then I would again try to decide where are the regions and. Good. So, the example I was working on was just a bit more complicated because we did not have an intuition of what the original function was. Here it's square root of g, in the other case, as I told you, was some Bessel function. Oh, the other difference was that I have g times x to the 4, so the slices are smaller and they rotate faster. But conceptually, it's more or less the same thing, so you can work out the details of the other case. Okay? Is everyone happy? Good. So I want to continue with, so we saw that there were at least three ways of doing analytic continuations. Either we use Cauchy equations, or we use this method of expanding in circles, or we find some integral representations and deform the contour to avoid trouble, if you want. This is what we basically do, right? So there are these three ways of doing analytic continuations. There is a fourth way, which is by using identities, which I hope to have time to get there today, but for now I want to consider a few more examples of analytic continuations, which are quite relevant for quantum field theory. Okay. Now, since the square root was a bit tough, let's analytically continue one. Okay? So let's consider the function I of, say, some variable, I can call it g, equal to 1. Okay? So of course, the analytic continuation of 1, we can use Cauchy equations, and the integral equations tells you that it stays 1. We can expand, and the expansion of 1 is 1, and it's trivial to analytically continue. But I want to be a bit masochistic and continue it by consider the integral dx over 2 pi I 1 over x minus I a minus 1 over x plus I for, and this is something that you will see a lot, you will define some function in some region and then you are expected to analytically continue if you want to get out of that region. And this would be true for real part, here it's g, for real part of g bigger than 0. You see, in the previous definition of square root, I could have defined the square root by this integral, and then I could say that this is defined for real part of g bigger than 0. Then this is certainly convergent, and then you are expected to analytically continue if you want to go to some other region, like we did. But this is often how you find, if you go to Wolfram website to see some special function, this is the kind of things that they will give you. They will give you some integral representation and some region where the integral, and they will tell you where is the integral representation valid. Where can you use it without deforming contours? If you want to use it in some other region, you just have to deform the contours. Okay? But they tell you, without deforming any contour, you can use for any g inside, which is provided the real part is positive. And indeed, it's true, it converges. Now, why did I put here real part of g bigger than 0? Because what is this integral here? I'm integrating, again, over the real axis. And then I have two poles. One when x is equal to minus I. And another one where x is equal, g doesn't need to be real, but let the real part be positive, so that it's in the upper half plane. And this would be the point IG. Okay? Now, first, I can add to this integral the contribution where I have a huge circle at infinity. Okay, this is the origin 0. This is some huge distance lambda. And I can add this part, this piece, to the integral. Why? Because here, the function, the integrand, goes to 0. The integrand goes to 0 as 1 over lambda square. And 1 over lambda square is enough to make it 0, because the length is proportional to lambda, and the function is going to 0 as 1 over lambda square. Okay? So length of this arch goes like lambda. And of course, lambda times 1 over lambda square goes to 0. Okay? So I can add this piece, and I don't change the result. So this contribution is 0. So I can think that I am integrating over. So I can sum to this result 0. In other words, I can think that the integral, instead of going from minus infinity to plus infinity, I can write this as the integral around this half moon of the same thing, dx over 2 pi I, 1 over x minus ig minus 1 over x plus ig plus I. Okay? And there is somehow a pole here, ig. So what is the value of this integral? I just have to see where are the residues inside this half moon. Where are the residues? At x equal to what? To ig, right? When x is equal to ig, here is a pole inside this region. What is the residue of this function? 1. right? So this is equal to the residue of this function at x equal to yg, which is equal to 1. It's the coefficient of 1 over x minus ig when I extend. So okay, it's independent of g and it is 1 indeed. So this is the function 1. Okay? Note that I could have decided, of course, to complete this integral not by that upper half, but by this lower half, of course. And then the pole would be at minus I. This is, of course, okay also. And here there will be the point minus I, and there is somehow the point IG here outside. Again, dx over 2 pi I, and the same function here. Where are the poles? Where are the poles now? At x equal to minus I, right? What is the residue of the pole? Someone. Minus 1. So would you say that this is minus 1?
No.
Why? Because of the orientation, right? So be careful. So here we are. There is minus 1 times minus 1. So this minus 1 would be the residue. And this here is because we are integrating in this case like this and not like this. Okay? So we are integrating in the opposite orientation to usual. So of course this is also equal to 1. So this is just a complicated way of finding the function 1. So now what would happen if I would be given this function and asked to analytically continue? Without computing, just analytically continue. I would pick my point G and move it in a complex plane, and as I would move it, the point G would move here. They would move somehow in a complex plane. Who cares? The residue is independent, it just gives 1. Right? So let's see what happens. So now, so by this wiggle here, I mean we now move G in the complex plane. We just start moving it in a complex plane. In particular, I can decide that G moves in such a way that here is my contour of integration. I can decide to move G in this way here. Now, what should I do in this situation? What would you say I should do if I want to go from, if I want to move G in such a way that the pole moves in this way? Now, before the pole decided to move here, okay, so what to do here? Well, the answer is simple. To be sure there is no problem, we follow the principle which is deform the contours always to avoid trouble. So before G starts to move, we change the contour of integration to this contour here. And now G, which is a singularity of the integrand here, can move without any trouble and we don't care. This point G doesn't hit our contour of integration, there is no divergence, and we never have any problem. Okay? And here would be the point minus I. And here would be the point G. IG. What is the value of this integral now? It's 1. Because again, I can close it up and pick this pole or close it down and pick this pole. Right? So of course, this is the correct analytic continuation. Right? This is equal to 1. Exactly the same reason. I can close it up and pick this pole, close it down and pick this pole. Okay? Is it clear? So the only thing we should do is, if we see this point approaching the region where there would be a pole on my integration contour, I want to run away and never let the pole, if the pole would be approaching, I would be going away. And if the pole would continue, I would continue to deform the contour. By deforming the contour, I don't change the result, so I always have the right to do it. And this is what I should do if I don't want to create singularities. Because otherwise, if this is on the contour of integration, I get a pole on the contour of integration. Right? Yes?
When g is negative 1?
When g is negative 1,
this point approaches this one, right? Okay, so let's, very good. So, now, in practice, let's arrive there. In practice, this is not very convenient. We don't want in Mathematica to tell integrate over such funny contours, right? So what we do is the following. Let's write this contour in the following way. This is equal to integrating like this. Now, this was the path of g. There is no trail left. It's not like an airplane leaving some particles, right? G is here. Who cares about the trail? So let's think of this contour in this way. So we have this. Then we go around g, and then we come back. And this will be the point ig, and here will be the point minus I. Now, this part here, because I'm integrating down and then up with opposite orientation, this part here is equal to 0, and I can kill it. I just deform and eliminate this part. So this is equal to this integral here plus this integral here around the point ig, and then there is a point minus I here. But this is equal to this contour around here with these poles here, I, G, and minus I. This is this part here. Plus 1. And the 1 comes from the residue here. This residue is just 1. Okay? And this 1 is the integral around the point I, G. And now, you see, if you are given this integral here, okay, what would you say? What is this integral here? What's the value of this integral?
Zero.
Why? Because we can close above and there are no poles. So this is equal to zero. So indeed, naively, you would say, you would look at this function and say, if this is the definition, then when g has a positive real part, I get 1. When g has a negative real part, the poles are on the same side and I get 0. So if you take this formula literally for any g, you don't get an analytic function. You get a function that it's 1 when g decides to have positive real part and 0 if g decides to have negative real part. It's some step function. It's not an analytic function. But if you decide to think of this as giving you the function in some region, and then you should analytically continue by deforming the contour as you change g, then it gives you the function 1. Okay? And of course, from this point of view, nothing special happens if these two points collide, which was your question. I just get a double pole here, and I can still close above and still get 0. Okay? So it's important that the way the game works is I give you the function for some region of g, and then we should analytically continue to go to some other regions. It's not like I'm giving you a function. This is a bit different than the other case, because naively this function is well defined for any g. If I give g equals 5i or g equals minus 5i, you can always compute this integral. Sometimes you get 0, sometimes you get 1. In the other case, I was obliged to choose some region, otherwise it was not even well defined, it was divergent. Here what I should do is I fix some region, and then I stick to that and I deform the contour. Or I start from the other region. And this is perfectly consistent. The analytic continuation of 1 is always 1. If I would start from real part of g smaller than 0, I would be analytically continuing 0. And I would always get 0. Okay? So sorry for these trivialities. Good. So I want to consider a few more examples. Are you all used to this kind of manipulations? Or is this somehow on? Yeah? So, let's consider one which is more important for that you will see often this kind of manipulations in quantum field theory. Let's consider now the function I of g, which is 1 over g, which I can write as the integral dx over pi. Okay, let me write it in first a way, which is obvious that it's 1 over g. Let me write it as 1 over g times 1. 1 over g times the integral dx over 2 pi I 1 minus x minus gi minus 1 over x plus gi. So this is obviously always equal to 1. This stuff here is equal to 1. Is it obvious for everyone? Should I explain something or it's obvious? It's exactly the same reason. I have one pole above, one pole below. I either pick the one above with plus sign or I pick the one below with minus sign and I get always, the derivative is always 1 or minus 1, so this is always 1. Exactly the same thing. Just replace this I by IG and nothing changes in the argument. Okay? Good. So this is always 1. But now, let's suppose that now these two poles are synchronized. And they are, one one is here, the other one is here. This is the origin. This would be IG, and this would be minus IG. And I want to rotate G in a way that I will end up with G in the real axis. And this G rotates accordingly and goes there. Okay? Now, right before it hits the real axis, so right before it hits the real axis, I don't need to do anything. Just IG is here and minus IG is here. Okay? Now they want to go to the real axis. They don't want to stay slightly above, they want to go to the real axis. So if they want to go to the real axis, I cannot do this trick of just picking the residue and then going to the real axis because they really insist in sitting exactly where I would like to integrate. So when they go exactly to the real axis, what I should draw is that I must deform my contour and go slightly above and go slightly below here. So here, I'm rotating this guy in this direction, this one in this direction. So I would have this point here. This would be my point IG minus IG. Now, this is a smooth function. This is a function of G, which is an analytic function, it's a smooth function. So of course, if all these distances are infinitesimal, this is equal, because this distance, we are dealing with distances which are infinitesimal. This is, of course, equal to one epsilon before this, but I did not need to deform the contour. Okay? Now, this integral here, or this one here, what is this? What are these integrals? Where are the positions of these zeros? So here, okay, let me write this integrand I of g is equal to 1 over g integral 1 over pi g over x squared plus g squared. I just put both together. This is another way of seeing that it is, of course, given by 1 over g, because this is a properly normalized Lorentzian. For those who know, who are used to these distributions, this is, of course, a properly normalized Lorentzian. Now, how does this denominator look like in this situation? Now, x squared plus g squared now is equal to two zeros, one of them at position x minus absolute value of g minus I0 times x plus absolute value of g plus I zero. So I want to spend a few seconds emphasizing explaining this point. So let's see if this is clear to everyone. So where are these zeros here? Where are these zeros? This zero, this distance here, is absolute value of g. And this is a zero when x is equal to absolute value of g plus I zero. This is the position there. Sorry? I can cancel it, yeah. Yeah, there is one G inside, one G outside. I can cancel if I want. But for now, I don't want to cancel. Okay. So this is the point G plus I0, which is this one here. G equal to absolute value of G minus I0. And this, of course, is the point where X is equal to minus absolute value of G minus I0, which is the second point here. Okay? And this is equal to x squared. So let's do the math. X minus absolute value of g plus I0 squared. I0 is some positive. So this 0 is positive. It's rather a 0 plus, if you want. Or an epsilon, where epsilon goes to 0 plus. I don't know who asked for more rigor, but he should be in pain now. So so this is a zero. When I write a zero, it's a positive zero. And this is and this is what it is. And this is equal to x squared minus absolute value of g squared minus 2i0 absolute value of g plus 0 squared, or minus 0 squared. And 0 squared is 0. I mean, it's an infinitesimal square. 0 squared, this is really 0. And this stuff here is the same as minus. All this stuff here is the same as minus I0. Why? Because 0 is a positive infinitesimal. I'm multiplying it by another positive number of order 1. I get another positive infinitesimal. So at the end of the day, so when g hits the real axis, the way to represent this integral is to say that I of g is equal to 1 over g integral dx over pi g over x squared plus g squared, absolute value of g is just the g squared, minus I0. So this minus I0 here is something that you will see throughout throughout the year. This minus I0, the way to interpret this expression is in either this picture or this picture. This is what this means. Integrate either in this way or in this way. Whatever way you prefer to think. Okay? Any question here? Very good. It's like an excellent time to break. Yeah, so please pick one survey. Okay, can someone help me distribute? Can you distribute a few? Can you distribute a few? Okay, someone who is not writing. So. Can you distribute a few? Someone who is not writing, can you please distribute a few? I'm tired of distributing. Thank you.